Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 346, recorded on December 2nd, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm good. Living.
Cool.
Still breathing.
Excellent.
Yeah. Jeff Gamet's also here from the Mac Observer, as always. How's it going, Jeff?
It's going awesome, and I'm glad you're doing well.
Yeah. We were just talking about cool pictures of Saturn. So Cassini has been they've been doing stuff with the data dump that they got from Cassini, and they just released a really large composite of Saturn. And I will put a link to that in the show notes. It's good for backgrounds, and yeah, it's cool. First thing, we're going to talk about the iMac, because as it turns out, it looks like the iMac Pro will have an A10 Fusion chip in it. This is according to several of our favorite developers on Twitter, including Guillerme Rambo and Stephen Trojan Smith and Jonathan Levin. They have found information in, I believe it's OS 10, Mac OS rather, that says that there's going to be A10 Fusion chip in there. There's evidence of Ola Siri.
Yeah, I think it's the beta firmware for the Mac Pro, and I can't figure out how they got a hold of that. I guess it's out there in the developer program somewhere.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it has a special code name, or it may be the OS for the Touch Bar.
You're talking about they've been digging into.
They were digging into BridgeOS.
BridgeOS, that's it. What is that? I didn't even know. I couldn't figure out what that was.
I don't know what it is.
That's where they discovered this stuff in the firmware for or in the software for BridgeOS, I believe, is where this is coming out of.
All right. So from what I understand, and this is one of those things that's just so frustrating, because developers that are into this, they never explain what it is, and they just leave everyone wondering.
They're just like, yeah, it's BridgeOS.
Yeah, it's just BridgeOS. Duh. And if you don't know, well, geez, I don't know what your problem is. But, okay, so from what I understand, and I totally get this could be completely wrong, it's part of the operating system that's designed to handle the different types of chips that Apple is using. And exactly what it's doing in that process, I'm not sure. So I think it ties into Touch Bar, and then apparently into things that we're getting in the new Macs that are coming out too.
I think that this, we're going to get emails regardless about how we're wrong in some way, but
which would be great, because then maybe someone's listening and they know what told you was really.
Please tweet at us at Michael Johnston. I'm guessing that BridgeOS, I'm looking through this little article here that is not really an article. It's just a string of like contents of this BridgeOS. You can download BridgeOS. It's an installer. Mm-hmm. It is an update. Doesn't tell you what it's for. I could just do that right now. It'll probably involve a restart.
Perfect.
But I'm guessing it's something that has to do with firmware on your Mac. So something that involves the not SMC, but the not open firmware either. But you know what I'm talking about. The kind of bridge between the low level hardware and Mac OS. I think that must be what BridgeOS is. So anyway, they found several goodies in BridgeOS.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all assume it's a deep part of the operating system. And it looks like it's close to the EFI.
Right, that's what I was looking for, the EFI. And I guess there's some like legacy Next stuff in there too. But the, I think the interesting part is we're seeing aspects of iOS here, which is increasing the amount of iOS proliferation into Macs, as we've seen with the Touch Bar. We saw the, was it the T1 chip on the Donglebooks.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that this is going to increase the ability for Macs to do things in a low power state, which is pretty cool. So we're thinking Hola Siri, what is that, PowerNap kind of stuff. I guess there's a boot chime. It's a new boot chime that is not like the traditional Mac OS boot chime. Now, Donglebooks do not have boot chime, right?
Right.
Which is kind of lame. But those are really the only Macs that don't, correct? So you got all the USB-C MacBooks forego the boot chime. But the iMac, I believe, still does have the boot chime. So
as far as I know, it does.
It's really odd. But I like the idea of having that incorporated into the Mac. I think it makes sense that you would need to have an A10 chip for this sort of thing, especially if for a lot of the more sophisticated things that happen with Siri, such as setting up that ad hoc network to make sure you're not talking to all of the Siris at the same time, for example, which I have to mention, have you guys experienced you trying to maybe talk to your iPhone Siri and your iPad Siri just really wants to talk to you instead, even though it's across the room?
Yeah.
And that one just takes over. So it does the thing that it's supposed to do, where you're not talking to multiple Siris at once, but it's just decided that the one you want is the iPad.
Yeah, you'd think they could do some sort of audio latency distance detection, i.e. this one's getting the sound a little bit sooner.
Or even just
default to it.
Just an amplitude. You're
obviously closer to it.
Just an amplitude thing. Like, this right. one's louder.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. It's probably that one.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be a little bit smarter.
Yeah, anyway, but this looks pretty cool. So there's more integration of iOS tech into Macs. It's kind of fascinating to see that it's coming first to the Pro machine. But I like it. I dig it. Let's see.
Well, I mean, there's nothing to say that this isn't prep for... Well, I guess you kind of need the low power chip, right? That's the whole point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why it's coming to the iMac Pro. It's just probably timing more than anything else.
True. We got another text bug in iOS. iOS 11, full of bugs, full of really weird, interesting bugs.
Bugapalooza.
Yeah. What's going on with, was like Federighi sick or something? I don't understand it. But...
So I have an idea here and nothing to back it up. And the idea is that Apple was eating their own dog food from a coding standpoint. And I think they may have been taking tons and tons of stuff that had been coded under their old tools and were reworking them in Swift. And it was just too much, too fast, and they weren't able to catch all these problems because of it.
That's an interesting theory.
And I have nothing to back that up. It's just kind of a feeling.
I'm sure these developers could tell us. They'd probably know. They could probably look at the assets and tell you pretty quickly. But
I don't know. It's just weird because they have more people testing this stuff before it goes live than they ever have before.
Testing is one thing, but reporting is a completely other thing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on. If somebody had seen, you don't think they have the thing out in public beta. They have it out in regular beta, and not one single person went, "Oh, hey, the texting's messed up."
It's conceivable. So here's my thought process. If I'm on a beta, I'm on a beta, number one. And so whenever anything goes wrong, I go, oh, it's a beta. And unless it's something that's consistent, I don't even think to report it.
Tens of thousands of people. How many people do they have beta testing? It just baffles my mind.
Yeah, it's literally thousands of people.
Okay, so perhaps it's an issue of too many people reporting bugs.
Well, that's just the thing, is like, and there's also the prioritization of bugs, right? So if you've ever been involved with Apple's bug program, you know that there will be these niggly, annoying bugs that just get ignored for like forever.
Mm-hmm. Like multiple OS versions, totally ignored.
Yeah. So I think they kind of have that. They have like a low-hanging fruit problem, and like this one feels more major than low-hanging fruit, but maybe somebody sort of flagged it as like, oh, we'll get to that right at the end. That's not a, you know, that's not a big fix. And then, oops, forgot that one.
Yeah. So the new bug, it's correcting the word it to IT, like I.T.
But not for everyone.
Not for everyone.
Yeah, I can't make that bug happen.
It didn't happen for me either.
The eye bug, though.
Yeah, I totally get the eye bug to
That's
happen
everywhere. There are so many people I interact with on a daily basis who still
haven't updated.
Yeah. And I, like, I don't know. I think I don't want to be the annoying person who's saying update, but I think I should start once I get this.
Right now, like, I think it's important to tell people update.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're running iOS or macOS High Sierra, you need to update.
Oh, if you're running High Sierra, please update. Oh my goodness. We got that root bug.
Right.
I don't even understand how that happened. What kind of bug is that?
That's the kind of bug where someone on the development team went in and hardwired in something to make it easier while they were testing, so they wouldn't have to keep enabling root. And then forgot to undo it. That's my
guess.
Actually,
no, it was some sort of weird timing bug. From what I read, is that every time you hit the attempt to log in, it was logging a login failure or something like that. And there was some sort of code where if you were doing it quickly like that, it would get off, and it would think like the access was in the future or the past. I forget how it worked, but basically,
oh, holy crap, that's insane.
Yeah.
So basically, Apple took decades of what was already working solid in Unix and overrode it with something that was completely broken.
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I had the details in front of me because I could barely understand it, but it had something to do with the timing and how you were attempting logins, and it was logging those logins, you know, and then checking against that, and then it would get the timestamps were off. So again, it seems like almost every bug that Apple ever gets bit by that's a like a big major bug is like a date time thing.
Oh my God, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, let's just go to it because we have that. So we talked about the IT bug, and there's also another one. Actually, yeah, that's next on the
list.
This
is the big one because
this is big
and bad. This morning,
yeah,
if you tried to launch apps,
today's the day that you get a new surprise from iOS 11, and it's it's a good one.
It's like an advent calendar of bugs.
Crash and get a logo and crash and get a logo for forever.
Yeah, you're going
to
get a springboard boot crash. Reboot crash failure right. Situation. So starting on December 2nd, I believe after 12:15 a.m. local time, you're going to have this issue if you have any apps that send local device notifications, such as something that gives you reminders, regular reminders for anything. Not pushed from a server. Whenever the notification, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's whenever a notification from one of those types of apps come in, then you get the crash. So you have the opportunity to stop it, right? So you get the crash and you go, holy crap. You go into your settings. Apple's suggestion is step one, roll your date back before December 2nd.
So really?
Yes. This, I believe, is in a support article. Yeah.
Why don't you just turn off notifications until you get the 11.2 update installed?
Well, that's also recommended in the install, which I thought was insane.
Yeah. So ultimately, update to 11.2. So roll back your date for a day or so, update, and then you should be okay.
Oh, really? The support article I read said that you need to open up your notifications and go into every single app and turn notifications off, then run the upgrade, then turn all your notifications back on.
Yeah, that's a...
But this is only if you have been experiencing the problem. If you wake up, you start using your iPhone or iPad, and you're not having any new trouble, just install the update and move on.
Right.
Okay.
And cool. You're fine.
And it's, you know what? It's kind of miraculous that I'm not... I was up last night, and I I get emails when there are new software released, and this was a weird one for iOS 11.2. They dropped it at midnight,
right?
Yeah, that tells me that this was a crisis release.
Yeah,
and they really screwed up because they didn't update the release notes at all. So I saw it this morning and I didn't know about, well, I had read, I take it back. I had read last night that whichever developer had posted about this impending bug. So some developer posted, and I saw it on Twitter last night, a few hours. He's like, oh, in a few hours, everybody's going to get hosed. And I saw that and I kind of went, oh, that's interesting. It's probably not going to impact me. I don't know what I thought, but it was late and I just like, I'm going to go to bed. So then I woke up this morning and I saw that there was the update and I'm like, oh, that's really weird. Why would Apple push out an update on like midnight on a Friday? That's strange. But then I look at the release notes. It's like, oh, this enables Apple Pay Cash. I'm like, awesome. I can try out Apple Pay Cash. So first thing I do this morning is I install the update. I wait for the update to go. Comes back up. I go into my wallet. No Apple Pay Cash. I go into the Apple Pay settings. No Apple Pay Cash. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I even texted Jeff. Jeff, dude, what's
I even tried to send you money to see if I could get it to work. Nope.
Right. And I'm like, no, this has not enabled Apple Pay Cash. And then I do a little more research and come to find out that, oh, no, it's still being turned on. They didn't turn it on for anybody because this was just pushed out to fix this bug. And Apple Pay Cash is not coming till next week. So don't be fooled. Even though the release notes, the only thing the main release note says is this enables Apple Pay Cash. Peer-to-peer.
No, it doesn't.
But it does not.
It don't.
The code is in there. The code is in the release, but it's not enabled on Apple's end, so you won't see anything. And then it even further messed me up because then I went to Apple's support article, which hadn't been updated, and said, oh, you need to be running beta. And so I installed the public beta, which I really don't even really want, just to see if it would work, and it's still not working. So I think if you weren't already in the beta program and have Apple Pay turned on for your account, I don't think it's going to get turned on at this point until next week. So
yeah, so at this point I'm back to not being able to do Apple Pay Cash with anyone, whereas a couple days ago I could.
Oh, really?
Well, the problem is All the people I know that are hopping up to 11.2 now, of course, they don't have Apple Pay.
Right, but you could still do Apple Pay Cash with somebody who's on the beta and already has it activated, right?
I'm assuming so, but I haven't been able to track down any of the people that I know have already been on the beta.
So I had been holding off, and what I'm bummed about is that I guess now that I've enabled the beta, like getting out of the beta involves completely like erasing and restoring my phone.
Yeah, don't do that. Like, so how do we?
Oh, I thought all you had to do was delete the profile.
Nope.
I think you can take out the profile and reboot.
Apple support article says you need to basically do a backup and then do an erase and restore.
That's lame. So how do we know that it's coming next week?
That's the word that's been coming out.
Old, I think.
That's the word on the street with the cool kids.
All right, so now here's something that I'm really having a hard time being my head around. Apple pushed this update out at like midnight, mm-hmm. so Apple Pay isn't working yet. And that's something that's scheduled for this next week. So that tells me they were planning on releasing this update sometime next week. But it had the fix for the date notifications bug, which means they already knew it was there.
No, so, I think they rushed it in last night. Like I said, that was one developer reported the bug like 6 hours before the bug was actually going to like hit. That's when I saw it.
Well, and I'm assuming that's when Apple saw it. Why did they do another point update and roll that out?
What's so interesting about...
Actually, from what I heard, people that were already running beta don't have the... And I can attest to this. I have the beta. I have local notifications that have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had the bug pop up for me. So I'm pretty sure this fix was already in the beta.
Maybe it was just some... like incidental fix.
That's even weirder. It's just even weirder.
Yeah, what the, this, okay, but this that's is really seriously the case. Messed up.
It's still it's back with the theme of what the hell is going on with quality control in iOS and macOS.
Just everything. Yeah, I mean they're screwing up left and right. We had two like critical one in Mac and one in iOS this week. Two critical bugs. Like these aren't just minor bugs. These are like. Mess people up. I don't know what's going on. Someone can pwn my system bugs. I mean, for the Mac, that was the case. And for this one, it's like every time you're trying to use your phone, it's constantly rebooting to Springboard. No, I mean, that's just like...
Well, it sounds like it's a great opportunity for jailbreaking, actually.
Yeah. So... this is so weird, though. I mean, we're having discussions right now about Apple that I never would have imagined taking place.
Yeah, well, you remember a couple of years ago, was it before... was it the Leopard, Snow Leopard era? When, like, Mac quality control was just going out the window and they kind of had to regroup and get a handle on it?
Yeah, but it didn't seem like this. Over time, I've kind of mellowed to the problem.
No, I mean, we've been on this path before, and I think it kind of got resolved, and it feels like it's happening again. Like, Apple's just, I don't know if they're just pulled in too many directions and just not paying attention, or what's going on.
Well, you know what is kind of crazy about it is it seemed like High Sierra and iOS 11 were sort of the releases that were the goal of it was to avoid this kind of issue. It was the regroup release, right? It was the let's fix all of our dumb stuff and make it better and just not do too many new things. And for some reason, this has been one of the worst ones in years.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy.
So let's just say I'm very happy that I'm still running Sierra on my MacBook.
Yeah, I think we have to give Apple kudos, though, too, for, like, jumping on. I mean, the thing is it shouldn't happen, and Apple has come out with public statements saying they're gonna focus harder on this, or they're going to put in new mechanisms and things. Like, they're going to relook at what they're doing from a QA, QC standpoint.
They did?
But, yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
I didn't see any of that.
They did for the Mac. I'm assuming it applies also to iOS.
Earlier
in the week, it was Tim Cook. I think it was Tim Cook made a statement too. I can't remember who, Bloomberg or one of those places. I can find you the statement if you want.
But yeah.
The point is they said, we're going to try and figure out what happened here with the root. This was specifically with the root bug on the Mac and make sure that it never happens again.
Yeah, they're doing a whole audit now.
Freaking hope so.
Yeah, but I mean, so that aside, I think we do have to like say, hey, at least like they didn't wait. Like they jumped on these things and pushed out updates. Like the root bug, it was within 24 hours. And with this one, maybe it was ready to go, like Jeff was saying. But I mean, they did take the initiative to make sure it was pushed out should have done it the day before it was going to happen, but
they, I think
they pushed it out the morning after it happened.
Probably just did it as soon as they were comfortable doing it.
Yeah, but I mean, kind of to Jeff's point is, if it was already, if the fix was already in there and they knew it was time sensitive, like, why would you not time the release to happen before the bug hit? That's just bizarre.
Yeah, well, they did roll out developer beta 6 earlier in the day. And so that had the fix in it, as far as we know, because I haven't had to do another update.
It was earlier in the day, so that could have been and them rushing the code in the morning, making sure then, it got out to get a little bit of beta testing, and then
waiting until the last minute, you know, before midnight, to push it out.
Well, midnight Pacific.
Midnight in the United States.
So then my theory holds true that they may not have even known about this bug until like days. Thursday or Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I do see the statement from Apple Business Insider. We are auditing our development processes to help prevent this from happening again. That's the little the tail end of that. So, yeah, honestly, you know, it's weird. This is the Snow Leopard version release for both of these operating systems. I would be totally okay with them doing it again this year, or just not even putting out another one, just leave it 11 and get us up to like 11.7 or something, and please just make it work well, because there are so many glitchy things in iOS right now. And to be fair, they did a lot of new stuff with the iPad was highly reworked, and so yeah, give us iOS 11.7. Give us iOS 11 Snow, or whatever you want to call it. And do the same thing with the Mac, because holy cow, that bug. But yeah, let's move on. What do we have?
I still haven't upgraded yet for a lot of those reasons.
High Sierra?
Like, I just don't want to deal with it. Yeah, to High Sierra. I'm still running Sierra, and I probably will for another couple months.
Are you on which MacBook Pro do you have?
2015.
Is that one that also has the graphics card bugs? Issues with High Sierra?
Oh, I don't know.
So I know the 2014, and I think the 14 and 15 vintage are similar. Although do you have an AMD graphics chip in that?
This one's the top of the line one, so it is a AMD. Yeah, the Radeon R9.
Okay, so 370X. I'm on an NVIDIA. I think it might be an NVIDIA issue. But yeah, so people who upgrade to High Sierra on the 2014 MacBook Pro just have epically, cripplingly bad graphics issues, which actually get solved mostly by installing updated drivers from NVIDIA.
Nice.
But that's a very Windows-like problem to have. So, what else do we have here? Oh, yeah, so we talked about the IT autocorrect bug. Oh. So
yeah, I fixed that, by the way. If anybody wants to look on my Twitter, I have the fix for that.
Is that a keyboard replacement?
Oh my god, you have the best fix for that ever.
Well, what is it?
You just go into the keyboard shortcut thing, right? So and you add a shortcut for IT, and then you set the replacement to clown face emoji. Done.
That's pretty good.
Beep beep, Reggie.
So there are other things in iOS 11.2 that we get, although we might have mentioned it. So we got we mentioned Apple Pay Cash, which I guess is coming next week, we think. We're expecting faster 7.5 watt fast charging for...
Well, that should be enabled now, right?
Yes, yep. Yes.
Yes. Now I just need a fast charger.
That's wireless charging, right?
Yes. Yeah. Contactless charging.
Correct. And?
No, there's definitely contact.
I was going to say there is contact there. And then there's the
metal on metal contact I was referring to. conductive charge. Non-conductive? No.
It's inductive.
So inductive charging. Inductive,
yeah. Non-conductive charging.
Or you could just say inductive.
What we'll call it?
Just say inductive charging. because that's what it is. And now we get the Wi-Fi / Bluetooth toggle pop-up. Ooh, let me try it right now. I haven't gotten my first experience with that.
For that
turn
either.
Off Wi-Fi.
Yeah, oh. It's nice to see that thing pop up.
Disconnecting nearby Wi-Fi. Does it
do it every time? Tomorrow. Can you like be
no.
like, no,
what,
no,
it does
no?
It does it as the big thing the first time. And then after that, when you enable it, you just get this little line at the top of your screen that scrolls across real fast. And it says, disconnecting Wi-Fi temporarily. It's just a short little line that's out of the way.
And can I,
the way they do it is good.
Actually,
can I ask about the line under the, if this is a beta thing or if it's a 11.2 thing?
It's an 11.2 thing.
Ugh.
It showed up in like
the line under the horn,
I think. And
for for control center.
Yeah, and it's weird that you have a line on one side like that.
Just stupid.
Either put it on both sides or take it away.
Yeah, that is odd. And just to clarify the Wi-Fi Bluetooth toggles, they when you tap them for them to be disconnected, it goes from blue to a like filled in white, which is distinguished from the like, I don't know, the kind of translucent gray, which indicates something is off. And so I think when I go into Wi-Fi and I actually flip it off, yeah, then it actually has a line through it with the gray. So it's there are several different
indicators.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
So and that little I have to ask because this is my first experience with the control center line that's on the horn on an iPhone X. Mm-hmm. Is that it looks to me like it's color matching to my desktop pattern. Like mine's yellow because I have a yellow desktop pattern.
Yeah, that's probably why. Okay. So
I think it's
not yellow all the time, right?
It's kind of a gray thing. It's a translucent, so it's picking up the color of your desktop.
Yeah, like all these other visual elements in iOS. Yeah. Okay,
it's
so we
only
have
only on the lock screen.
Interesting.
Yes, and only on the lock screen.
We have several more things to talk about: cheaper iPads, easier to get iPhone X, and other stuff. But first, we have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, which is Away at awaytravel.com/TIOSS. Away bags and accessories make for the perfect holiday gift with their lifetime guarantee and 100-day trial, so there's a perfect size and color for everyone on your list this holiday season. Or you can grab an Away gift card if you can't make up your mind. Away makes their awesome travel suitcases out of high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middlemen and selling directly to you. You have the choice of 9 colors and 4 sizes, the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large, which is perfect for extended stays. All suitcases are super lightweight and made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance. The interior features a patent-pending compression system, which is great for overpackers, and it's like one of my favorite features. There's a TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft. There's a removable, washable laundry bag that keeps dirty clothes separate from clean. There's a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, they'll fix or replace it for you for free. And there's free shipping on any Away order in the lower 48 states. I really, really love the included battery. It's super awesome. It's a 10,000 milliamp hour battery. It has a 1 amp and a 2.1 amp USB charge port, so it can fully charge an iPhone up to 5 times. And like I said, you got the little compression system in there that is great because it's a compact little bag, but you can fit a lot of stuff in there with this nice little compression system for all your stuff. And now you can get $20 off a suitcase by visiting awaytravel.com/TIOSS and using the promo code TIOS during checkout. That's away.com/TIOS, promo code TIOSS. All right, so with that, we have rumors, according to Digitimes, of a new, the most affordable 9.7-inch iPad ever coming in late 2018. They believe it will cost $259.
Yet you still have to pay $399 for an iPad mini.
Well, are they – wait, they still make that?
We have this conversation. Yes, they are. They sell an iPad mini 4 for $399. I had to look it up too because it came up on another podcast I was on, and I'm like, they still sell iPad minis? Oh, they do, and they're really expensive.
Well, I think doesn't the iPad mini have more bells and whistles than the 9.7?
I think it has a better processor and stuff, yeah.
Does it?
Well, because they did an update. It's the iPad mini 4. I'd have to look at the tech specs.
Yeah, so they got the fully laminated display, the anti-reflective coating. Let's see.
Oh, it's an A8. No.
No, it's not. Oh, God, it is. Wait, it's A8 version. So the mini is an A8 and the 9.7 is an A9.
Yeah, so that's it's confusing. Not better.
What the hell?
It's just smaller and more expensive.
Oh, good.
But what's the storage in the base model of the 9.7 currently? Is it a 64?
I don't know. I closed it. And I don't know how to I forgot how to use my Mac now. Hang on.
I got it. It's a 32.
No,
so that's the difference. Is the mini base model is a 120. The only model is a 128.
So. Yeah, versus a 32. So if you want to compare apples to apples, the 128 versus 128, the bigger iPad is $429. So it's $30 more for a bigger.
I don't know. For a newer processor and a bigger screen, I think I would go with the iPad 9.7.
I think I would go with the iPad 10.5. TBH. That thing is an incredible device. Even without the handwriting stuff, the speakers on it are incredible. I mean, just the speakers alone on that, watching content is just, it's immersive.
Anyway, we've gotten way from.
Why are we talking about this?
iPad. What's,
oh yeah,
I'm enjoying
that is an amazing price. That is a deal. I mean, even if it's just the current specs, which it sounds like it's going to even get a spec bump, right? To like an A10 Fusion.
I believe so. I don't see it in here. They may not have mentioned it.
Yeah, I believe it will be a spec bump from the A9 to the A10 Fusion, which would make sense. And then at that price point, starting price is deal.
At $259, you can now. There are so many industries that are just going to just gobble these up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, it's interesting. Take a look around you and realize every once in a while how often iPads are being used now, just in general purpose in retail, especially either at the checkout situation or just around retail, just all over the place. iPads are being used for so much now, and at $259 for a 9.7 inch iPad, I think Apple's going to sell a crap ton. This is going to be the I just need a screen with internet iPad.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Totally. Because you're not going to have enough storage. So that's about all you can use it for.
It's probably going to be 32 gigs.
Right.
But hey, it works. You got Safari, and that's all you need.
And you can stream your music from Apple Music, and you can stream your movies from iTunes.
Make a great Square POS system.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah, the iPhone X. The shipping estimates are now under a week in the U.S.
Yeah,
you can pretty much. That's too long for you, go into a store and just buy one.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
Yeah, you can just go into a store and buy one now.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much. I mean, you might have limits on what your color and storage choices are. You know, maybe they may or may not have your carrier. But in general, it's seeming like you can get most models just if you walk into a store now.
Is this because they've been overworking their student labor?
Yes. Okay, good. At least according to Ming-Chi Kuo, supposedly they're up to producing like 400,000-500,000 units a day, whereas like 2 months ago I think they were at a fifth of that, something like that, capacity. So they've just really ramped up.
Yeah, it looks like you can I can pick up a 256 gig white today.
Yeah,
I can't get a 64 gig though.
Right. So I mean, and again, it's going to vary by store and region and what carrier you're picking and all those things. But in general, you shouldn't have too much trouble getting one. And if you can't get one, you know, today, just check tomorrow. So we're at that sort of place now with the iPhone X.
Whoa!
It's not because they're not selling well, as some people are wanting to sort of allude.
Well, big frickin' deal if they're not selling well. It's no skin off my back. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, they're selling extremely well.
They are selling extremely well.
For the record,
I've only seen one person that I know has one.
You know Jeff and I.
Well, okay, yeah. One person I know and like have physical contact with regularly.
All right.
I love mine. The camera is amazing.
The camera is amazing.
Does it have trouble recognizing you in the morning?
Some mornings. But the first couple days in the morning, it had trouble, but then it kind of figured me out. And it's very rare for me to have morning trouble with my iPhone.
I'll still go on the record and say Face ID, I think, is not as good as Touch ID was. But I am fully willing for Apple Pay?
Oh, man, yeah.
I'm fully willing just for unlocking the phone. For me, I consistently get a first-time fail-to-recognize issue. Usually on the second time, it will work. And I have to do the little tricks like take my attention away for a second and give it attention back.
Have you ever tried if it gives you a first time error? Have you ever tried
the passcode?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know if some of the issues are sometimes I'll have my glasses on. Sometimes I won't. Sometimes I'll have a hat on. Sometimes I won't. And if it's doing that whole learning thing, but it's not remembering any of that stuff, or it's just not consistent. And I know it works for a lot of people, but again, I'm not bashing on it. I like the technology. I like it when it works. It's freaking awesome. If I mostly do the pick up the phone and swipe up thing, I would say that works. It seems like works more consistently. I don't know why that would be the case, but you know, in general, even like stupid stuff, like using it in the car is horrible when Siri does her stupid, you need to unlock your iPhone. Well, guess what? My iPhone is face down, pointed up at the ceiling of the roof of the car. So now you want me, as I'm driving, to pick up the phone and point it at my face so you can unlock? No.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
I'm not doing it, and I don't do it, but it's like in the past with Touch ID, I could just reach over without taking my eyes off the road, without doing anything, and put my finger on the sensor, and boom, yep, it was unlocked, and I could get the information that I needed. So yep, it's great. I like it in a lot of ways, but in a lot of ways, it's not as good as Touch ID. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to, you know, like Apple, like Jeff said, with Apple Pay, with buying apps, the stupid double click,
Oh my God, I hate that.
Ugh, so lame.
Yeah, Apple Pay with Face ID has gone from being this transparent thing where I'm just paying for stuff with my phone to a process.
Right. Luckily, I never use my phone for Apple Pay. I always use my Apple Watch, and it's awesome.
And I use my phone for Apple Pay all the time because, you know, a lot of times I have a jacket on and then it becomes just this weird thing with trying to keep the jacket out of the way while I'm trying to do that Apple Pay. And it's just faster and easier to do the phone. But now it's this whole thing. Take it out of your pocket. You have to double tap the home button. Make sure you're looking at it. Okay, did it authenticate? Now you can do your transaction.
Yeah. Yeah, so the attention thing, and yeah, I know you can turn the attention thing off, but I don't want to because that severely lessens the security.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel like I should have to do that compromise because the technology doesn't work that great all the time. But here's the thing. Again, just like with Touch ID the first time, the first generation was kind of janky a little bit. It was really good, but it wasn't awesome. And I have my feeling with Face ID right now is it's really good for a lot of situations, but it's not awesome yet. And I think they can get there, but I think there's some improvements and it's probably going to come with generation two. So it's definitely a first generation technology. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's awful or I don't like it. I'm saying it's not as good as Touch ID in its last iteration was. And it feels like Touch ID 1.0. You know, and it's Face ID 1.0, so it is. I mean, in a lot of ways, that's the best comparison I can give people.
And it's still better than facial recognition from any other phone I've seen.
Oh, yeah. That's not even a competition.
No.
I want to see an iPhone X being used by astronauts on the space station and see... will it work well while they're up there consistently and then see if it just completely stops working when they get down on the ground when gravity pulls their blood out of their face.
Well,
I don't think blood affects it. I think it's more because it's a depth map. It's more about the shape.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Their faces. Haven't you seen people in space? Their faces get all poofy.
Right. So what would happen is you would have the one time again where it would not work and you would unlock it with the passcode and it would learn the new.
Maybe it'll be one time.
Now on Earth face.
Maybe it'll be one time. Maybe it'll be a bunch of times. I don't know. I want to see.
It's supposed to be once.
It's supposed to be, but how is yours?
Adam, I think you need to
seems to work pretty,
Face ID.
Pretty consistently.
Okay. I'm just saying. Fun little
well,
experiment.
Jeff, you know, again, there's a number of issues that I run into that are probably contributing to the problem. And probably the number one is holding the phone, bringing it up and holding it too close to my face.
Uh-huh.
Especially like in the morning because yep. I'm in bed. I don't have my glasses on yet. And actually, I need reading glasses. I'm just of that age. So there's a lot of caveats to what I'm saying. But at the same time, when we're talking, is it better for me than Touch ID was? No. Touch ID always worked. It was super fast. It was easy to use. I didn't have to do weird things like, hey, want to install this app? Double tap the side button. I just, you know, it was just... Face ID just feels like it's growing. It's an infant and it needs to mature a little bit. That's it.
And it has a lot of potential.
Yeah. Yeah. And Touch ID was the same way. Touch ID was an infant. When we left Touch ID, it was a very mature product. So I think Face ID will get there. It's just they've got to work out some of the things. Like, I don't understand why we have to do the double tap on the side button when I install an app. Why can't it just recognize my face and go, oh, you're trying to install an app. Cool. Let me do that for you.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Oh, and actually I know why I just answered my own question. It's because if there's a payment behind it, you would automatically get charged and you may have accidentally bought the app, right?
All right, so for free apps, it should just work. And for paid apps...
Does it? Maybe it does just work for free apps.
I've had to do it with free apps consistently.
I think that's all right.
Didn't we have that option with like Touch ID,
too?
Did
you want to... I mean, did you want to accidentally buy like Grindr or something? Accidentally download for free, I should say. But speaking of Face ID, we've got our... favorite they're from Vietnam, right?
Oh yeah, the people that made me say words so you had to edit the show. Sorry about that.
Yeah, the crazy dismembered mummy thing. So they have better mummy masks now. They are even creepier.
Yep, they're still creepy as well, you know.
How do they? Okay, how do they make these masks? Is how what I want to. How do they make? They're so they 3D have to. Printed.
Yeah, what they do is they have to do a 3D scan of the person.
Yeah, they have to do a 3D scan,
and then they're using this special metallized type of material for 3D printing the mask.
3D, it's a powdered 3D print with the, I think that's those are the ones that use the lasers, right? Pulled up through like this.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're doing this other thing with the eye cutouts, but they're not telling people exactly what they're doing.
Well, they're infrared images for the eyes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Infrared
they
images.
They take an infrared picture and then print it out, and then they just sort of paste it on. That's why the eyes look weird.
Yeah, they do look weird. Okay, so...
But I think the infrared gives the contrast for the attention that... Because they have to use the infrared... So that they can fool the give me your attention, that it thinks it's like a real pair of eyes and not.
Yeah. So ultimately, yeah, it's a really cool proof of concept and interesting. I mean, they went through a lot to do this. Ultimately, this is like a frickin' Tom Cruise Mission Impossible style fake out.
Yes. Yeah, and the point is it can be done.
It can be done, but
pulling it off is going to be next to impossible.
No, yeah. Mission Impossible.
And this security research company saying that this is proof that Face ID is not secure, and if you have sensitive data, you should never use it. And oh, come on. That's a load of crap. This is...
Yeah, so a couple things I want to point out that I know from like looking into this, and why most people don't need to be concerned about it is, again, one, the technology needed to actually first just even create the mask is relatively difficult to pull off. They do say that like the 3D facial scan, they could set up a room, so I guess you would imagine like, I don't know, the vestibule in your bank or something like that. You set up three cameras an array of cameras at different angles. They say they can snap what the thing they need to make the facial model in a few seconds. So it's not like you have to sit in a booth for 30 seconds and get your face scanned. So, but then you've got to do the face 3D print, and you've got to get the IR images correct. And okay, so assume you make the perfect mask. Okay, so let's just say you can get that far and you have the perfect mask. It is definitely going to fool Face ID. If you watch the latest video, what you will notice, because what they did this time around is they made sure to show that they registered the guy's face on camera, so it was a brand new facial registration. And then they had the mask unlock it immediately after that.
Yep.
But you notice when he goes to the phone, so the mask is in this erector set like frame. And the reason the mask is in that frame is the mask has to be perfectly positioned to actually work. So it has to be at the exact right distance, at the exact right angle. So they put it in that frame, and you'll notice before the guy activates the Face ID to see if the mask will unlock it, he spends about, I don't know, it's about 10 or 15 seconds, but you can see him lining up the angle of the phone. He's looking straight down at the desk at something. And the reason he's doing that is he's got to get the phone in the perfect position.
Right, yeah.
So here's the thing is, if you fail 5 attempts, that's it. You're done. Mm-hmm. So even if you could do this perfectly in terms of creating the mask, getting it to actually unlock in your first 5 attempts is going to be incredibly difficult. And these guys can only do it on the first shot because they've worked at it many, many times and they figured it all out exactly. So yeah, they can pull it off on camera because it's already pre-set up.
And while this whole process is going on, let's take it back to the beginning where you would have to start getting the person to sit still and cooperate while you do the 3D scan of their head. I've already told them, look, you unlock the phone now, or I'm going to break 3 more fingers. And yeah. And I'm in the phone because they're going to unlock the phone.
Right. Yeah. There is easier ways if you need to crack into someone's phone. And I think it's worth pointing out too, for all the people who are like, see, Touch ID is better. Remember, Touch ID was spoofed with a fingerprint lifted from a glass. Again, it was just as difficult of a process, right? You had to get a good lift, and then you had to create a high-res fingerprint, and then create a mold, and then, you know, all that stuff. But they were able to do that. And to me, that seems easier, actually, than this would be.
Yeah,
because you get someone to put their fingerprint on a glass and take that away and probably pull that off easier than...
Yeah, but lifting prints is an art. It's not nearly as easy as people think. I mean, all the print lifting you see on television, it's like, okay, boom, got it. Now we've got a perfect print. No, it takes a lot more work.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the point is like both of those things, the average person, you're not going to have to worry about it. If you're, you know, a high-ranking government official and you're keeping sensitive data on your iPhone, I would argue that that's the problem right there.
Yep.
yeah, that just shouldn't be happening.
I think it's probably secure even in that situation.
That's the kind of thing, you know, if a government agency was targeting someone, they could definitely use this technique to probably crack into that person's phone. I have no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a Mission Impossible thing, but I think that even in that situation, it is kind of Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of thing that while the whole process is happening, it needs to be cut together as a montage, so you see the surreptitious face scan with the super secret laser,
right.
and then you're hearing the Mission Impossible music playing in the background through the whole thing. You've got to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep using Face ID.
Me too. I don't have one, but me too. Last one. So it looks like, according to Nikkei Asian Review, Apple is planning to develop and produce their own power management chips within the next 2 years. So according to them, these will be the most advanced in the industry and could have processing capabilities that allow it to better monitor and control power consumption in the iPhone. One of the biggest things that you need for lithium-ion batteries is a power management chip that not only manages how power is consumed from the battery, but actually charging it is kind of a dangerous proposition. You can completely overcharge a lithium ion battery, no problem, and they'll just explode and catch on fire, and that's why you need to have these power management chips that prevent that from happening. But they also help in consumption. So in the next couple of years, it looks like Apple will be doing this, and I would imagine it's less of a vertical integration challenge and more of a, you know, a power management efficiency thing.
This is no surprise to me. Of course Apple's working on these chips. Even if we don't have 100% confirmation right now, of course they're working on them. That's right. Apple's modus operandi. They keep designing more and more custom chips to refine their devices. Just how it works.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. There's much to say on this story other than it's happening.
I agree. So looking forward to it. It will definitely be a bullet point in a future keynote.
Yeah.
So with that, let's do some picks and get out of here. So Adam, you're first. Go.
All right. I'm going to pick something. I haven't had a chance to play this too much, but it needs to be picked because of just how awesome the business model is. Where it is, and I need to get the name of it right. It is a car racing game, and it is called Grid Autosport. You will need an iPhone 7 or better to actually run this, because they claim they have console level graphics. This is from Feral, Interactive, or it, is, it might just be Feral. It's your typical auto racing game where they have different courses and circuits, and like a, there's 100 cars, 100 tracks. But where this goes different is that it does have in-app, quote-unquote, in-app purchase, but they've made all the in-app purchases 100% free. So, huh. And 100% free for forever. So you buy the app, and I want to say it was...
It's $10.
$9.99. And you get to play forever, and you get all the cars, you get all the tracks, all the downloadable content, all the customizable content, and it looks amazing. The graphics on the thing are incredible. But again, you are going to need an iPhone 7 or better, and you'll probably need to plug into battery be plugged in, because it is a battery suck. Because it's working everything on the system, but it looks great. I'm still trying to get the controls down. It does do the tilt controls. You can also do just on-screen controls, and it does have support for... I may try doing it with my my Bluetooth controller, MFI controller. But yeah, it's awesome. And they need to be supported, because they are just producing a game that's $10 and you get everything. And especially with these car racing games, most of them are not that model. So
yeah,
I want to see more of this. So everybody should just buy this just for that reason alone, in my opinion. But plus, you get a great game on the other side of it. So if you're into car racing games, this is a really good one.
I agree.
Grid Motorsports.
Jeff, what is your pick?
I have a game this week also, and mine is it's a cool AR kit game that I found, and it's called A-Rise. So it's spelled capital A, capital R, I-S-E.
Love it.
Yeah, it's sort of like if you took Monument Valley and turned it into AR. So you have like this floating chunk of land in front of you, and there'll be a structure on it. And then you have to get your little guy to go from the starting point to the end point. And so you have to walk around looking at this M.C. Escher style structure from different angles until you can get the optical illusions to line up just right, so that two things that are apart from each other suddenly look like they're a single walkway, and then your little guy can move across. And it's a really cool game. So it's called A-Rise. And what I found is that while you can play it on any device that supports ARKit, you want to do this on an iPad, because you really kind of need that bigger screen to be able to really look at the structures as you're walking around. So I did this with my nieces over the Thanksgiving holiday. And we took over the kitchen, and we're going around the kitchen table trying to line everything up and get this little guy to walk from the bottom to the top of the structure. And it was loads of fun. A-Rise.
Sweet. So it's $2.99 for that. My pick is the iBlazon iPad Pro case. So it's the case I'm using on my 10.7-inch iPad Pro. It's $15. I got it on Amazon. And this is like one of my favorite iPad Pro cases that I've had maybe ever, because it's a hard case. But it's flexible around the edges. It's kind of got two materials merged together, and the majority of the case is completely transparent. So it looks really nice. You can see the back of your shiny iPad, and it supports the smart cover. So it checks all the boxes for me. It completely protects everything, has support for the smart cover, and it's inexpensive and looks really good. And it's just the best $15 you could spend.
So which one do you have? The clear case?
Yeah, I have the clear.
The Halo clear case. I thought you were going to say you had the kiddo protective case with the handle. It makes it look like makes it look like a toilet seat MacBook.
No. Okay, so they're
You totally need that, Michael.
Yeah, I know, right? All the girls will want me then. There is, you can get clear or you can get clear black. So it has a black border on it. So if you have a black iPad, it looks good on that. But yeah, so it supports the smart cover or the, I guess the, just the cover. Wait, what is the one with the keyboard? Is it keyboard cover or the smart cover? That's perfect.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, so because they have a couple different models. I'm trying to figure this out. I'm on their website. So do you have the one that's just the Halo clear case with the kickstand, or you have just the one that's just the frame and they call it the bumper case?
Description says all new iPad Pro 10.5-inch case, i-blazon, compatible with official smart cover and smart keyboard, clear hybrid cover case, updated version for iPad Pro 10.5-inch 2017 release clear.
I think you have this one. I think it's the bumper case that you're recommending.
Okay. I mean, I'm putting the link in the show notes. It doesn't really matter, right?
Right.
You'll find it. Check it out. It's right. 15.
Well, I sent you a text so you can see.
Yes, that is the one, the bumper.
Okay, so that's called the clear bumper case.
Why don't they say what it is in their actual description on Amazon?
Because it's some weird third-party company on Amazon, probably, and they put in a bunch of keywords. So
no,
that
it says it's iBlazon. But it's okay. Probably iBlazon.
Ships and sold bought from iBlazon?
Hang on. Let me see. Sold by iBlazon, fulfilled by Amazon.
Right. So they're probably they'll keyword their titles so that they get better search rankings on Amazon.
Yeah, no kickstand.
So that's the other one.
Because I got the triangle.
Right. Anyway. Looks like they have some cool cases, even if you don't get that one.
Actually, the kickstand one, you know what? I have to say, the one thing that I really like about the Surface tablets is that kickstand. That kickstand is magnificent.
Yeah, so this one with the kickstand looks the same. It just looks like it wouldn't support the keyboard cover, unfortunately, the kickstand one, because it goes all the way around.
Right. So. Yeah. $15. It's really good. I like it a lot.
Cool. Good pick.
So with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. You can review the show on iTunes, give us some stars, and if you have any feedback for us about the show, send that to feedback@theiosshow.com. That's the email address. And advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast podcast, which is maccast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, the TMO Daily Observations podcast, and he's at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always awesome. I love hanging out with you guys.
And I am at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and you can toot me there and see my toots and all that stuff. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.